Well, great. Thank you, Cliff. Maybe before we get started, I'm going to give you a quick story. Working for our regulatory agency, I don't have a lot of opportunity to present at these various ASA conferences, but sitting in the room today did remind me of the last one I was at that I presented, and that was actually back in 1982. It was in Anaheim, California, and I went to the first day of the conferences and came back in the afternoon only to find my wife standing in front of the hotel holding my suit coat and my slides in her hand, and a whole bunch of fire engines in front of the hotel. And sure enough, the hotel started on fire, and my lovely wife tried to save it, and the only thing I had to tell her was, for the sake of ASA members, throw both the suit coat and the slides back in the fire, and we might be better on it. So it's a pleasure to be able to wrap this up today. Before we get started, I would like to recognize Brad Bredlin, who's a co-author on this paper. Brad and his staff have done a marvelous job over the last 3 or 4 years in developing an all-new program, a water quality certification program. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the elements of the assessment tool at the tail end of my talk. What I'd like to talk today about is the metrics associated with groundwater protection as it particularly relates to nitrogen management. This is a big issue in Minnesota. About 7 years ago, the residents of Minnesota made a huge commitment and passed what we call our Clean Water Legacy Amendment. This is a 3/8 cent sales tax that 1/3 of these revenue goes into environmental protection work. And believe me, this has infused an enormous amount of activity in all the state agencies that work in environmental issues. Along with that money comes a lot of scrutiny. And the Star Tribune and others have watched this very carefully, as well as the legislators. And this is just an example of one of the articles that came out in the Star Tribune several years ago, titled Paying a Price for Fertilizer at the Faucet. This happens to be a very interesting story about how the residents of Dakota County, a county that's just south of here, about 30 minutes, it's also a county that has some very difficult geology, very high agricultural production and practices in this area. And this article is about how some of the residents are dealing with nitrates in terms of real estate transactions and public health. So it really brings the issue then, how we provide assurances, and in my world, policymakers are a big deal. And we have to be able to provide policymakers, as well as the citizens of Minnesota, to make sure that we're taking the appropriate steps as we try to move forward in dealing with this difficult issue. The Department of Ag is the lead agency in Minnesota, and our jurisdiction is over groundwater specifically as it relates to nitrogen fertilizer and pesticides. I'm going to talk considerably about what's called our Minnesota Nitrogen Fertilizer Management Plan for the rest of the presentation. This is an extraordinarily complex plan. It's one that we've gone through an enormous amount of revisions. This plan's been around a long time, but with Clean Water Legacy funds that puts a new breath of air into this program. And we felt it was very imperative because a lot of things had changed in 20 years. And we worked very closely, as we always try to do, with our ag organizations, the environmental groups, the University of Minnesota, as well as our sister agencies, as we try to come up with revisions in that plan. So this plan is basically all you need to know about is the blueprint for how the state is planning to move forward with dealing with impacted groundwater from normal fertilizer use. And what I'd like to talk today about then is some of the associated metrics and how we're going to collect that information and use it for future policy decisions. And I'm going to emphasize a lot on how we're actually going to collect that information. There's a lot to this plan. I do want to point out that tomorrow there's a special live streaming session that will take place in this room for the entire day. Most of the focus will be on Minnesota issues, and at 10:45 we'll have the opportunity to go into considerably more detail on the nitrogen fertilizer management plan, and then later in the afternoon Brad and his staff will be given a presentation on just the assessment tool associated with the ag certification. So we invite you to join us in that presentation tomorrow if at all possible. Let me just give you a real quick conceptual overview of what this plan looks like when it was put together as a result of the 1989 Groundwater Protection Act. In concept, I think it's an excellent approach. The way this plan works is it looks at two very key elements. First of all, what's happening in the water resources, and in this particular case, we're talking about nitrates in groundwater. Are they acceptable or are they not? And the second key piece to this whole deal is BMP adoption, the human element. Are growers adopting the best practices out there, or are they not? So it's a combination of the water quality conditions as well as where growers are at with the adoption of practices that really kind of drives this whole entire plan. This was a great plan, but this didn't have a lot of details to it that we need now. And one of the things that we spent almost two entire years with in working with this advisory committee that I referred to just a couple minutes ago, we decided to come up with a much more partitioned approach. And if you look left to right, you're going to see the words prevention, level one to level four. Those are the various categories between nitrate conditions and BMP adoption. So on the far left, the prevention mode, kind of think of this as the vast majority of the state of Minnesota. We're estimating that probably 90% or so of the state's agricultural areas will fall into this prevention category. This basically means we don't have a nitrate issue. We want to keep it that way. We fully intend to continue promotional activities with the business community and Extension and our other partners. But we don't have a nitrate problem per se. Level one, level two, and so on, the nitrate conditions would be progressively getting more severe in this scenario. So what we were able to do then is to start putting some metrics or stats to this program, and we spent a fair amount of time doing that. So in terms of nitrate concentrations, what this our planning committee decided to do was in the prevention category, and again, this is a vast majority of the state, by definition, less than 5% of the wells exceed the drinking water standard of 10 parts per million. Level one exceeds 5%, and then level two and level three, you're going to see that's not a typo. They both say 10% or more. What differentiates level two from level three is the BMP adoption. So again, that really kind of drives this plan. So we now have some clear definition on how we are going to move forward with this plan based on nitrate concentrations. I also want to emphasize that this classification is for very localized regions. We're going to be working primarily on a township scale when we do this type of assessment work. And I also want to point out that this is a great metric, but one of the big challenges is going to be is then how are we going to achieve that? So this is a big, massive project, and the department has worked for about 3 or 4 years now in experimental approaches. What we've come up with now is what we're calling the Minnesota's Township Testing Program. It's something that the ag community, the people that were on the Nitrogen Fertilizer Management Plan Committee really wanted to have badly was a methodology to accurately characterize groundwater contamination and severity. They did not want us using archaic data from our county well index. They did not want to use sparse data. They basically wanted a good scientific base to move forward with it. We think this approach does that. I'm going to walk you through just a couple of highlights of what this township testing program looks like. The way it starts out is we will first work with local soil and water districts on this type of coverage map. And this map is an integration between the DNR groundwater sensitivity maps that have been developed and are continue to be developed, as well as overlaying areas of the state where we have 30% more row crop production in these townships. So when we put those two factors together, we come up with this map. It identifies that we have about 300 townships in the state. And by the way, we have about 20 to 21 million acres of farmland in the state, so it's a considerable chunk of change here to do all this work. But we think there's about 300 townships that we should be concerned about water quality underneath them. So this is our planning, how we start the discussion with our soil and water districts on where we're going to start doing accelerated nitrate testing in private wells. When we look at these 300 townships, we think we have about 70,000 households here. So it's going to take a considerable amount of work to do this, but here's what we hope to do. On a township scale, we want to identify impacted areas from ag production. That map is going to help zero. That's the starting point. What we've decided to do, and again, Clean Water Legacy funds are imperative to this whole process, but what we're doing is offering no-cost testing to all rural households on private wells. Every household in that township will get a letter from the Department of Ag and through the Soil and Water Districts. It's a joint partnership, asking homeowners to participate in this testing program. It's done through the mail, so it can be done fairly quickly, fairly effectively. So the way we work this at the department is we contract with the local soil and water districts through what we call joint powers agreements, and then the soil and water districts are involved with the promotion, the local entity parts of it, and they contract with water testing, private certified labs to actually do the analysis. And generally, the labs do all of the mail outs, so everything's done by the mail. So again, each household that's on a private well should be getting a letter, joint letter from the department and from the soil and water districts encouraging the households to send a sample in. At a later time, so what happens here, this can happen fairly quickly. Once the contracts are in place, within 3 to 6 months, we have an extraordinarily good idea of how severe nitrates are in that particular township. In Minnesota, many of our townships have between 50 to 300 households, and we're averaging about 30 to 40% participation rates in this testing program. So you can quickly see that we're going to be operating off a pretty hefty database as we move forward in many of these counties. As I said before, in the plan, what we've decided to do is anything 5% or more over the drinking water standard would be called a level one, and anything higher than that, over 10% or higher, would fall into this classification of either a level two or higher. By the way, in this program, we always start with a voluntary approach. We're never going to jump to a higher level. We have to allow time for the growers to adopt the science and give them the first crack at changing things before we go to regulations if that's what we decide to do. I'm not going to talk a lot about the data today. I'll be discussing that more in detail tomorrow. But what we're finding is, and please keep in mind that the first 60 townships that we've tested, we've been working with 8 counties right now, 60 townships tested so far, that includes about 7,300 wells. What we found is that about 75% or more of those wells exceed 5 parts per million, and almost half of the wells in these initial townships were above the drinking water standard. So we've got some pretty significant problems to deal with as we move forward. But again, keep in mind, we're probably working in the worst case scenarios right now. Okay, that's the water monitoring side of the equation for the plan. That's the easy one. The difficult one is measuring human dimension. Where are growers at with adopting BMPs? Again, that's a critical policy decision that needs to be made as part of the plan. And it's a very, very difficult one, but a very important one. I'm just going to reflect on some of our past history with testing. We've worked very closely with the National Ag Statistics Service for the last 10 years or so. This has been extraordinarily useful to partner with NAS. They have the expertise, the staff, the phone enumerators that can do this type of work on a large scale. We work with about 200 phone enumerators out of the St. Louis office where the central NAS location is done. We do a large survey or several surveys every winter with NAS. Again, this is extraordinarily useful information because they can cover ground that we couldn't do that by ourselves, by all means. When Dr. Mull is talking about interjecting some of these fertilizer rates into our modeling and assessment work, we can say with a great deal of confidence that we know where Minnesota growers are at in terms of rates, timings, and some of those management practices. This particular study was one that was done in 2010. It involved about 4,500 Minnesota corn growers. And by the way, one of the keys to this whole thing is make sure the commodity groups are on board. They can promote this through their own organizations. If they put a top spin out that there's value to their organization for doing that, you're going to be a lot more successful in moving forward. The other thing that makes Minnesota somewhat unique is the fact that because of the wisdom of the University of Minnesota 25 years ago, and they had the vision to develop clearly defined BMPs for the state, that makes the data collection and interpretation much easier. Minnesota is a big state. We have very different soils, climate, cropping rotations. The state is divided up into five different nitrogen management areas, and each one has its own unique set of 4 R's. And we can use this information then as the baseline when we start collecting use information from our growers. When these surveys start, they're usually started and completed within about 2 weeks. In this particular study that we did in 2010, that I'll refer to some of the data, within that two-week period, about 6,000 farmers were contacted, and it's a system that works extraordinarily effective when properly done. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through the results today. That will be tomorrow's mission as we start to dissect some of these rotations. But through this survey work, we're able to now start looking at various cropping rotations and looking at deviations from the University of Minnesota's recommendations. In this particular case, this was nitrogen rate on corn in non-manured systems. And the green bar is the range as set by the University of Minnesota. And you can see we had a nice distribution and fairly good compliance with the university rates. When we go through the rotations with soybean crediting, alfalfa crediting, and manure, we'll talk about that tomorrow, we're going to see things quickly deteriorate. But this is the type of information I think we really need if we're going to start putting effective educational program together, as well as making policy decisions on where growers are at with the adoption rates. If you're interested in this type of work, and again, I highly encourage, if this is useful information for your state, I'd highly encourage you to talk to your NAS staff. You can go to our website by just Googling Minnesota NAS and then nutrient management, and you'll probably find this page very easily. You're going to find some of the survey tools that we use. We spend a lot of time developing these tools. The partnership between NAS and the Department of Ag is we write the surveys, NAS implements them. And then frequently we contract with the University of Minnesota to help us interpret what those results say. Okay, I'm going to wrap things up here in just a minute, but one of the things that's also required in the nitrogen fertilizer management plan on a local level is to determine are growers adopting these best management practices or not. So the tools I described to you are extraordinarily helpful from a statewide perspective or a regional perspective, but we also need tools to help us collect information on a very localized scenario, such as a township. That's what's really going to power this nitrogen fertilizer management plan. We're just at the beginning of trying to figure out how we're going to do a lot of that, but it's really very obvious that one of the tools here that's going to be exceptionally helpful is building partnerships with our local dealerships. They have the inside knowledge on what the growers are doing. They have an enormous amount of information on the local level, and what we've been just starting the process with is meeting with the dealerships in some of these impacted townships and really starting to get the first-hand knowledge of, okay, if we're going to put educational programming together, what's it going to look like? What are the key features that we need to change as we go forward when we start developing educational programming? The other part of the plan requires that at the end of 3 years, that the department then has to do a detailed assessment with the growers to make that final determination if BMPs are acceptable or not. So we're just at that phase now where we're really trying to develop tools to help us do that. And that's what brings the Ag Water Quality Certification Program to the table. This is a great program, and it's one that looks at many, many different aspects of farming, including tile drainage, irrigation management, nutrient management, pest management, and of course, conservation practices, and all puts under a nice package. And Brad and his staff will be talking a great deal about this program tomorrow. The part that I want to mention was the fact that there's a very powerful assessment tool similar to what we heard about a little bit from Laura and others this morning. And you can see what that online tool looks like if you go to this website. But basically, it's going to be a nice tool for us to use. And who's going to implement this tool is yet to be determined. But our Minnesota crop production retailers have expressed a lot of interest in building a partnership with the department and being one of those key players and using this type of an assessment tool for their normal day-to-day business. Our crop production retailers also want metrics. We know there's a lot of good practices going on out there, and we all want a way to capture them. So we hope in the future that we'll be able to build that relationship with our dealerships and bring them into this whole arena. So right now we're under the process of really beefing up and have a work team together looking at actually improving the current assessment tool for nutrient management. And we'll hopefully have a powerful tool that will help us answer some of those difficult questions. So I'm going to wrap things up, Cliff. Again, tomorrow, an all-day streaming session. Please come if you can, if you're interested. I hope you enjoy your stay while you're in Minnesota with us, and take a few questions, and thank you. Any questions? Sure. Great question. The question is basically, do we screen the data when we go through the township testing program? What happens when the surveys go out, or the water bottles and the collection go out? We're asking the homeowner to fill out a one-page survey on what they know about the well. Is it is included in the county well index, the year of the construction, distances from contaminant sources. So the first screening is through what the homeowner knows. And when we do that initial test, the only way we're going to screen data out from that survey is if it's a hand-dug well. We have a lot of sand points, or they're also called drive wells in the state. In many cases, they can be a legal well, but a lot of times those are very susceptible to contamination as well. We're going to do an on-site visit at many of these wells if they meet the criteria. Either a department or our local soil and water districts will do a nitrogen contaminant source inventory and look at the well and do a quick inspection. And that data eventually would be screened out before we'd make a determination on is this going to be a level 2 or a level 3 or whatever. So there are some safeguards in there. We're banking on a high density number of wells, so if we do make a few oops along the way, probably isn't going to change the interpretation tremendously. But thanks for bringing that up. Any other questions? Yes. The well samples?
Yes.
We're currently operating at about 35% to 40% of the homeowners are participating. Obviously, this is a voluntary program. One of the things that we'd like to do, and we'll hopefully get some help from the Extension Service in the future, is how can we do a better job of getting those numbers even higher? In some of the counties, we've had as high as 65%, where there's been a long history of nitrate awareness. We've seen some pretty high numbers. Dakota County is a good example. Those numbers, I think, were between 60 and 70% of the homeowners wanted their wells tested. So I think part of it is just the awareness and making sure people realize why we're asking them to send those types of samples in. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you, and have a good day.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank each of the speakers for staying on time, and thank you for your questions, your participation. I look in the audience, and we've had some attrition from a high count of about 70 here in the room, and we're down to about 50 now. And a lot of ebb and flow, but I saw a lot of empty chairs. And personally, I think we had some tremendous leaders here on the program today. And I don't see Carrie Lavosky here in the room at the moment, but I know that she worked closely with Tom Brulsema actually in putting the program agenda together. So if you see her, I'd encourage you to express your thanks to Carrie for organizing this session. I think we had a lot to learn, and there's a lot taking place. A lot of opportunity yet, but increasingly we're going to be able to better quantify what our current condition is and how we can move forward and being able to chart that progress and importantly, as Bruce indicates, communicate back to our stakeholders and to the public to give them confidence that what we're doing is the right thing and we are making progress toward improvement. We want continuous improvement. And I think it's going to take a concerted effort by everyone in this room working with some of these folks that were on the stage today as leaders in the sustainability performance indicator development process. So I invite you to continue to engage on this topic and encourage you to also give feedback to Carrie Lavosky on what you might think would be another opportunity to have an audience that is involved in this activity of performance indicator use and development, so that we could further ramp up and extend our efforts. And from that vantage point, is there any comment or question beyond my need to remind everyone that is a certified crop advisor that the continuing education unit form is on the back table back there that you can sign or use your QR code scanner for that. Any other comments or announcements here? Well, if not, we stand adjourned and wish you the rest of the program today would be enjoyable, and that whenever you do go home, that you have a safe journey. Thank you.